This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yes, it's an incredibly high number. Last week we had stormy conditions on the Mediterranean. That weather cleared by Friday. So fine conditions meant that the number of people making that dangerous journey on the water from Libya to Europe really skyrocketed. And we saw 2,000 rescues on Friday, an incredible 4,500 on Saturday, and another 2,000 on Sunday.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have the full story coming up.
Also, South Sudan's army denies killing at least 14 civilians last week in the northwestern town of Raja. The Red Cross looks into finding ways to improve humanitarian assistance for Africa. And Zimbabwe celebrates 37 years of independence tomorrow.
We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: about 8,500 migrants were rescued on the Mediterranean Sea over the weekend in multiple operations. The Italian Coast Guard says seven bodies were also recovered yesterday. To date, over 30,000 migrants have entered Italy this year. Well, over 600 have died trying to make the Mediterranean crossing this year. Reporter Josephine McKenna has the latest on the rescue operations and reaction to the ongoing migration.
Yes, it's an incredibly high number. Last week we had stormy conditions on the Mediterranean. That weather cleared by Friday. So fine conditions meant that the number of people making that dangerous journey on the water from Libya to Europe really skyrocketed. And we saw 2,000 rescues on Friday, an incredible 4,500 on Saturday, and another 2,000 on Sunday. So these rescue vessels were a combination of the Italian Coast Guard, Italian Navy, and NGOs that went to the aid of those migrants who were crammed onto rubber dinghies and rickety wooden boats just off the coast of Libya. So quite an incredible operation, and the Coast Guard obviously said to me that they were very, very committed and very involved and very busy over this Easter weekend.
Did they confirm any deaths from these rescues?
Well, we have seen media reports, particularly from a Reuters photographer, who suggested that there were 20 bodies in the water, including the body of an 8-year-old boy. Now, the Italian Coast Guard was unwilling to confirm that number because so many operations were underway in different parts of the Mediterranean. But the Coast Guard did confirm that seven bodies had been found on Sunday. So that's another tragedy there, and still unclear whether that number may increase. No operations today because the water has become quite choppy again. It looks like a quiet day so far, but many of these migrants now are being brought to Italian ports. A German vessel has brought more than 1,000 migrants to Catania. Another 1,200 are expected in the Sicilian port of Messina this afternoon, and 450 others were taken to another port in Sicily. So massive numbers of migrants, and really raising questions about whether this agreement between Italy and Libya is really going to be very effective in stopping the people smugglers.
I understand there's been reaction from Italy's anti-immigrant parties. What are they saying?
The anti-immigrant Northern League, which has been very vocal against the influx of migrants into Italy, has already been speaking out. The leader of that party, Matteo Salvini, has been on his Facebook page this morning saying, "People are angry, and I'm one of them." He said, "We are at our limit. Too many illegal migrants. They should all be going home." He said, "Too much stress on Italians, and more attention needed to be on Italians." And that's certainly the sort of message that we're also seeing from Marine Le Pen, the head of the anti-immigrant National Front party in France. And no doubt she will be capitalizing on this influx that we've seen at the weekend, leading into critical French elections that are going to take place on April the 23rd in France, where migration is also a top issue in those elections.
Do you think this could possibly lead to any type of protest or demonstrations?
Well, it's difficult difficult to say. As you know, in Italy, it really slows down over Easter. Whether we're going to see a reaction is a little unclear. Most people are away on vacation, having a day off. I think the full impact of this influx really hasn't been appreciated yet, but the government has introduced new measures and new migrant processing centres that are going to be set up in different parts of Italy with a view to repatriating, removing migrants that don't have legitimate political asylum. I think certain Italians are going to be impatient to see some sort of government action if we continue to see this massive influx. We've already seen around 30,000 arrivals since the beginning of January, and we're just at the beginning of the summer season. So it's really going to test a lot of people's patience here in a country where unemployment is very high and there's still a great deal of economic crisis.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
In related news, a group of Africans living in Europe visited Cameroon this week to launch a campaign against illegal migration. Moki Edwin Kinzika is in Yaoundé with more.
This group is called No More Deaths in the Desert or on the Sea. Its mission is simple: to educate youth in Africa about the harsh realities of illegal migration.
We want to tell them that all the information the people give them before they start their journey are wrong.
The group's leader, Sylvie Nancha, was born in Cameroon. She has lived in the German town of Freiburg for 25 years. She arrived as a student and rose to become the town's first counselor of African descent.
I made a lot of interviews last year with Africans, and they told me that when they started the journey, they thought that the journey will take them maybe just 2 weeks, but they were 1 year or 2 years or 3 years on their way to Europe, and they spent more than €10,000. They had other wrong information, like if you arrive, we will give you a job, and they arrived in Italy, in Spain, or in Germany, they don't have a job.
Of course, those are the migrants who survived the crossing. The International Organization for Migration reported that more than 5,000 people died in 2016 in the Mediterranean. That's a 35% increase from deaths the previous year. Nancha joined forces with 9 other Africans living across Europe to tackle the trend. They plan to visit Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, Niger, Algeria, and Libya by the end of this year to screen a film based on Nancha's interviews with migrants. Hundreds of people gathered at each of the 3 screenings in Yaoundé this week. The goal of the film is to deter illegal migration. But youth at the event told VOA they know the risk already. Some of them said a lack of jobs and Europe's restrictive immigration policies leave few options.
C'est pas besoin d'un film aujourd'hui, c'est plusieurs films déjà. Mais je pense que
24-year-old Ngenang Bruno says films alone will not stop Africans who believe that the only way for them to make it in the future is to sacrifice and cross the desert and sea to Europe. He says the will to live is strong and it will take work to change that. The young people in the audience cited stories of people they know who made it to Europe illegally. But in Yaoundé, it is not hard to find other Cameroonians who failed. 29-year-old Robert Alain Lipoti cleans dishes in his restaurant at Etudi neighborhood. His uncle loaned him the money to start his business after Alain returned from his sad adventure across the desert trying to make it to the Mediterranean. He says he ran short of food and water when he spent 3 weeks trekking in the Sahara Desert. He says he saw people dying by him and there was nothing he could do to help. He says while in the town of Damara in Algeria, he had to escape police and then he trekked many kilometers to Morocco where he couldn't go out in public or walk because his stay was illegal. Despite the difficulties, VOA spoke to returnees who say they will try to migrate again. 35-year-old Milingi Bia Paul made it to Algeria but was scammed out of his money. He had to take odd jobs to raise transport fare to go home.
Le Cameroun entier les jeunes. Vous voyez un peu.
He says Cameroon, like other African countries, buries young people's talents. He says after finishing their studies, people still do not have jobs. He says why should he dream to stay in Cameroon when there are opportunities outside? Paul hasn't ruled out trying to make the crossing again. Moki Edwin Kinzeka. For VOA News, Yaoundé.
South Sudan's army has denied killing at least 14 civilians last week in the northwestern town of Raja. The Associated Press quotes the army spokesman as calling the accusation a complete lie and part of a negative campaign by the rebels. An opposition spokesman says the army attack in Raja Saturday morning. The report follows another incident earlier last week in which residents of Wau say they were the victims of ethnically targeted attacks. The UN mission have reported seeing at least 16 bodies.
Africa's going through its toughest humanitarian crises in years. Drought and flooding, as well as conflict, have created food shortages in many parts of the continent, leaving thousands homeless. The worst-hit areas include South Sudan, Somalia, and northeast Nigeria. UN agencies and many NGOs say international funding has fallen short of what's needed to help. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies recently met in Abidjan to discuss the way forward. Fatoumata Nafo Traore is the group's regional director for Africa. She told reporter William Eagle that the conference focused on what she called localization of aid to withstand these challenges.
Our feeling is that the national societies of Red Cross and the Red Crescent are local actors, and they should be able to attract external resources at country level and be able to develop communities' capacities to help them act whenever there is a health emergency, whenever there is a crisis like flooding, like drought and food insecurity and so on. So currently, we can't say that per se there is a proper localization of aid. It's an objective, and we wanted to ensure that we make it a reality in the African continent.
The conference also discussed forming more effective partnerships. Who did you have in mind, and what's an example of how such a partnership might build capacity to handle an emergency?
We have great partnerships. We talk about having the Red Cross societies being auxiliaries to the states, meaning that, they are the right hands of their government for any humanitarian assistance. The partnership that we built with UN agencies, and we also have partnerships with regional economic commissions, IGAD, ECOWAS, and so on, and the private sector. So we have different partnerships. What we wanted to do is, yes, we're having successful projects, but at small scale. How can we scale up those interventions to be able to care for more vulnerable people?
What ideas were offered to that? How do you scale up such partnerships?
The scaling up the partnership is related to finding additional financial resources. Currently, those projects that we are having with the private sector, like using digital services to map the risk for cholera, for example, helping to create better access to clean water, doing hygiene and sanitation, or having projects related to cash transfers in the situation of food insecurity, whereby you send that needed the resources on a regular monthly basis to the most vulnerable people, and through the mobile banking system, they access the resources where they are. They get their money and go to any shop and buy the needed food. So those projects are working, but at small scale. What we're looking for is that if we can mobilize more resources, the know-how is there, the tools are there, and we can scale them up.
The conference also discussed strengthening the capacities of local communities to deal with disasters. What did you have in mind? How can a local community be better prepared for a potential disaster?
What we are seeing is that drought, flood, and the related food insecurity are cyclic. They used to happen every 5 years. Now it's happening every 2-3 years. And we wanted the communities to use real-time data to be able to really, because we have meteorological, hydrological information that are made available to us. We wanted to translate them into really easy, understandable information for communities to react, and for them to be able to do that, we need to train them to make tools available. And the one interesting project that we have in Togo, for example, is that the dam. They used to have in one part of Togo a dam. And when the dam is full because of rain or because of the river water, they just open the vans and the water can flood villages on the other side. At the time that we understand what is happening, we just brought together the dam management, the village people, and the Red Cross societies are sitting together, and they're sitting and say, okay, we shouldn't look at this water as an issue. It is an opportunity for those villages, but it's only required to bring those different stakeholders together and so that they understand each other's problem. And they know when they will release the water and when the overflow will happen. And they use these extra water resources to grow vegetables and to have a second farming season.
That was Fatoumata Nafo Traore of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, speaking there with reporter William Eagle.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Haley Adams Fitzpatrick, and at 23 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. About 8,500 migrants rescued on the Mediterranean Sea at the weekend in multiple operations. South Sudan's army denies killing at least 14 civilians last week in the northwestern town of Raja. And the Red Cross looks at ways to improve humanitarian assistance for Africa. For more news and information, please visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Zimbabwe celebrates 37 years of independence tomorrow. Reporter Kudzyazi Zvinavashi reviews what this means to ordinary Zimbabweans.
In 1980, Zimbabwe's independence marked an end to a bloody war against white minority rule. Takura Jangaja is an independent political analyst based in Harare.
Well, I think to an ordinary person, it invokes memory of the liberation struggle and the values and principles that were supposed to be espoused in its aftermath.
Jangaja explains some of the things that were expected after independence.
When you get independence, you fought for something. What was it? Democracy, the right to vote, economic justice. So people tend to think about whether those things have been achieved and at what stage are they.
Mukudzei Majoni is a young Zimbabwean. He explains what the day means to him.
Oh, it means absolutely nothing now. It used to mean something, but now it just means another year of, you know, nothingness, lost opportunities, another year of, you know, struggling economically. If there's no jobs on the horizon, just going to be another year of frustration.
Zhangaza echoes Majoni's views.
So there's generally ambiguity about what it really means for the everyday citizen, because a good number might not feel those values and those principles and those objectives have been fulfilled. Some might feel they're a work in progress, but generally there's ambivalence and ambiguity about the full import of independence.
The liberation struggle meant sacrifices from the black majority and resulted in the loss of tens of thousands of lives. Zhangaza says Independence Day is honored through the country, even though many expectations have not been fulfilled.
There is definite appreciation of the liberation struggle and the processes that led to independence.
Dr. Prosper Chitambara is a senior researcher at the Labor and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. He says many Zimbabweans expected an era of prosperity.
A lot actually has happened since independence. There have been far-reaching changes to the structure of the economy. The economy has actually experienced a lot of deindustrialization. Right now, actually, 94.5% of the labor force is informally employed.
As a result, the cost of living is high, and critics say freedom of speech and other human rights are not respected. They say independence failed to fulfill the promises of employment, equal opportunities, free and fair elections, and other aspects of democracy. Zhangaza says, with continuous lobbying, young people might help realize the fruits of the liberation struggle. While Chitambara says, the country needs drastic measures that will shock the economy back to life. To mark Independence Day, the government has planned a day of celebration with parades and live musical performances. President Mugabe will light the symbol of independence, the eternal flame. The opposition Movement for Democratic Change says they applaud the liberation struggle and regret that the legacy has been tainted, in their view, by a Mugabe government. For VOA, this is Kudzai Znawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.